The majority of our members are running a little bit late. It's raining outside, they're driving on a bus. I know I come from one meeting there because the same problem, people are getting delayed. But we can't be waiting for long. We'd have to start the meeting itself. Good morning, Kikaba. This is Kikaba, good morning. Okay, how are you? The outline of the meeting is like this morning. We all know that there's been the commemorations of war veterans all around the world. And Mr. Maynard is going to give us a small word before we all stand up and have a small prayer on that one. And then after that, we have the presentation of the chairperson of the board. So it means the chairperson of the board is going to introduce the different members of the board that have come along with him. The committee has always been entrusted to interact with the board. So it's your opportunity today that we take some views and some understanding of how things are going within AMSCO. There is a presentation that has been prepared by the chairperson and his board about their working. That copy has only arrived today, so printing is not being done, and we will definitely get copies of this particular one. But what would happen is that the chairperson of the board will do his presentation, and after his presentation, we then allow for questions. So whatever the outstanding, we all accept that we have had an AMSCO presentation, but there were outstanding questions that were related to that you would expect answers from the chairperson and his board. So that's what is going to happen mostly today. For him to have made a presentation is also like great, because I had just expected that we'd have reflected on the whole presentation and then have moved forward on all the issues that have arisen during that particular period. But I will give you an opportunity to interact with the board overall and hear some of their views on issues. The board must be quite relaxed. It's your opportunity to explain some of the things and your own workings and the things that you do within the board. I do have three apologies. I know Mr. Hofmeyer had given me one of his apologies, and Ms. Caesar, those three apologies are acceptable. I don't think they are a big problem. They have been presented. So, how many members of the board do we have here today, besides staff? So it's quite clear that the board has listened to the complaints from Parliament and have done their best to make sure that everybody is here. I will find that to DIA. Are you okay? No, Mandy is here, that to DIA. Yeah. It's her responsibility to make sure that you have an agenda. Okay. Let's give you David to say one or two words.
Thank you, Chair. Today is the 11th of November, and it is Remembrance Day. And it's a day, I understand, on which we remember the fallen of all wars. And so I would ask if members of the committee and of the board would stand and have a moment of silence to remember the fallen.
mora mamma pe. Bunda bunda mamma pe. Call. And you call me a night of the guy. Hello. Members of the board, as I said, our members are going to keep on trickling in because of the weather. As of now, we have David Maynu right there, with Tatu Tiale, we've got Mabela. And we've got ministerial staff that has come along with you. So they always come at your house, these are COVID. You'll introduce themselves then. You can introduce yourself then.
My name is Clarence Kitareke. I am responsible for research in the Ministry of Defense and Ministry.
Chair, I'm Popo Modefe, Chair of Arms Corps. Next to me here, the Acting Defense Secretary, Mr. Mutumi. And then we have Mr. Sisom Sibi, who is the Chair of the Board Committee on Human Resources. Next to him is Mr. Winston Nabuchan. Siako. He is also a member of the Board Committee on Human Resources. We next to her is Ms. Verushka September, member of the HR Committee as well, and also a member of the board. And then Mr. Boroli, who is the Chair of Audit and Risk Committee of the Board. That side there is Mr. Krobler, who is well known to the committee. He's the Chief Financial Officer. Behind me here is the Acting Secretary of the company. She has previously been with Arms Corps and then she left Arms Corps, but because the current acting secretary is going on maternity leave, we asked her to come. As you would recall, the previous secretary resigned recently to join ESCOM. I don't know that is the best place you want to be, is that? But there, that's where she's going to have, she'll help solve the problems there. And then we have Mr. Defo, who is the legal advisor. Mishak Defo, legal advisor in Arms Corps, and the recently appointed HR general manager, Mr. Mbada, Shalom Zimbada. then we have Mr. Kwanazi outside, chief acquisition officer. Frankly speaking, I don't know. We were with him last night when we were preparing the presentation. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows the theory. I don't know.
Members that are arriving. It's Ndabeni. It's Mlambo. She's got a new hairstyle. We should really welcome her.
We also have Chris Rowe here from Acquisition and the DOD. Thank you very much.
can I still give over to you, Mr. Chairperson, to do your presentation now? Mandy, where are you going? Don't get too busy.
What's the chair?
Come back now from Osaka.
I'm bad.
Okay, I'm not a very good man. Yeah. Mr. Abe, you have sorted out your hairstyle. Okay, that's right. You know, you're very good. Tate Mlange. I'm greeting you. What's wrong? Hey, look, we don't have tickets here, you know, and so I'm getting worried. They have shown me the whole night that you are looking for tickets to go to the 2010 game. It's demanding too much. Okay. Yes, that's the truth. You think you're ready to present this? You think I will be presenting this? Sorry, sir. This is my meeting. You know, that's what is your meeting. Let us see. Babu Umlam, you remember I said yesterday that there will be a presentation, the older presentation.
Yeah.
But the successive the board decided last night to go and prepare a presentation. And so they have done a submission of it today. So that presentation will be introduced by the chair of the board. As I've already indicated that we would use both the one that was there, the original AMSCO one and this one, but they all fall under its leadership.
That's
okay.
As long as the board is clear that next time we need a presentation prior to today's meeting, for the next go through it and make analysis so that they can choose today.
I have been explaining that we do need an ADA response so that we can be able to do. But we accept what they've done now. And we'll leave it over to you. As you always say that it's not only Mr. Performer is here when we ask you questions, but what we do will allow him to be the one who says who is going to answer which question. So he is leading the delegation. The Secretary of Defense is really an observer today. It's not his business. He will take note of what you are concerned about, and if it really affects him, we can come in. But we are giving the opportunity to the board to be the one that gives a lot of answers to some of the questions that we are raising today. Is that fine, Honorable Members? Okay. Can we give over to you, Mr. Tumoli?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity. I must apologize at the outset that we were unable to attend the last presentation. I think there were some weaknesses in our channels of communication, which we have now, I think, streamlined. We do not expect to have similar experience in the future. The message had not reached us at the time. Now, the presentation we are giving here today, Chair, is not entirely new. It will contain things that will be in the presentation that was given previously, but this one would probably be done differently. And it's a very crisp one. We proceed, Chairperson, on the assumption that we are meeting with a new committee. So we are introducing ourselves and what we say we are about. So So we start off with the mission of Arms Corps as being that one of meeting the acquisition, maintenance, and disposal needs of the South African Department of Defense and Military Veterans, as well as the DOD and other clients in terms of defense material related products and related services. To achieve this, Arms Corps has to maintain strategic capabilities and technologies, and it promotes the local defense related industry. Arms Corps is currently a Schedule 2 public entity and reports directly to the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. The accounting authority is the board of directors appointed by the minister and has two separate roles and functions, namely to act as a tender board and to ensure corporate governance. The board has the following subcommittees which assist it in carrying out its responsibilities. The executive committee. Now, the executive committee is a committee, a special committee set up to deal with very urgent and sensitive matters or those matters which arise in the period when other board members might not be around. And that executive committee consists of two board members, myself, I think the other one is Mr. Rolf Meyer, the CEO and the CFO and the Chief of Acquisition. It's really a committee that does its work under very, very special circumstances. It's not the kind of a committee that is easily used. And of course, the board has recently said we've got to come back and deal with this committee, determine whether we really need it, whether that work can be dealt with in the context can be dealt with by specially arranged board meeting. But of course, there are a number of sensitive issues that it has to deal with. Whatever it decides is not final. It must still take it to the full board for ratification by the board. We have the Audit and Risk Committee. We have the Human Resource Committee. AMSCO's role is to promote efficiency and accountability with regard to defense acquisition projects by providing the following support functions: project management, financial management, legal services, project security, management of intellectual property. Now, this is what our mission is, and those are the committees we have set up to discharge. Well, it's too late if it is here, because they can't take calls. Now, a number of strategic initiatives have been taken to discharge this mission of Arms Corps. The first issue really is the funding. Arms Corps receives this funding as transfers from the Department of Defense, which we consider to be insufficient and does not cover the cost of running the organization. The board is continuously therefore engaging the DOD to address the problem. Internally, the organization is also continuously looking at ways to improve its processes and structures. The honorable members would recall that really the defense budget has been going down from what it was, a 5% of the GDP. I think currently we're talking of 1.5%. And the result is that it is imposing a whole range of financial constraints on elements of the Department of Defense. The initiative, therefore, that we are taking, Chairperson, include, among others, investigating and finalizing the funding model, investigating commercialization of the dockyard. It's one of those strategic assets that AMSCO is managing. We're looking at how we can optimize them. to improve the funding, to supplement the funding that the DOD is giving us. We are also evaluating the leverage assets, such as the AMSCO land. We have land in the same. Should we be going into this land, building offices, getting other government departments and whoever rent there, and the income used to augment the budget of AMSCO? On the human resource side, Chairperson, AMSCO is faced with a number of challenges, such as the erosion of skills, the aging workforce. We estimate that between 60 and 65% of the AMSCO workforce could really be described in this category of aging workforce. We have the challenge of attracting young talent and generally a shortage of critical skills. To address these challenges, and then of course we have also taken a number of other interventions, such as transformation and rejuvenation, training and development, retention and employee satisfaction, mentorship and succession planning. We are giving a number of bursaries to some students, but we are worried that the amount of money we are spending in that regard is far from being enough to meet the challenge, because when we are faced with this kind of a situation, it becomes necessary that we ourselves identify young engineers that we can train in the field of need within AMSCO. So it is something that in the coming period we're going to have to address very aggressively. But we would need money, of course, to do so. There is also the challenge of addressing industry transformation. In this regard, we deal aggressively with the question of broad-based black economic empowerment and the monitoring thereof and control systems, enforcement of BEE balance forecasts, because we have found that quite a number of companies are classifying themselves as the so-called sole source suppliers, and because they say, well, we are the only ones with this technology, therefore we don't have to comply with legal requirements of this country. They need us, so they will use us, whether they like it or not. So we're beginning to engage them to say, look, we're all patriots in this country. We've got to comply with the laws of the country and promote them. With regard to local industry support programs, we believe that as a board, the local defense industry should be our priority, and it is our priority. We are concerned that the largest proportion of tenders is going to foreign companies. The local companies getting in the region of 30%, 70% foreign, 30% local. And that local provision is largely your it's knowledge based, it's service based, and so on. So we have a problem with that. We think that we have to turn around that situation, and we're therefore developing the strategy to support the local industry, to strengthen specific skills and retain the skills that are there. We are engaging relevant industry players so that we could all develop a common approach in this regard. We have also been aware, Chairperson, that the defense industry in which we are operating is a very complex and difficult one. It is no longer those days of a bipolar world where you had countries behind the Iron Curtain and they were all being armed and heavy military manufacturing, and the others being the what was called the imperialist world. We're now living in a unipolar world after the collapse of the Berlin Wall.
So, and they have been rapid movement towards resolving conflicts peacefully. So there is less and less market, therefore, globally and locally for the defense industry. As a matter of fact, we see strategic shifts in the number of companies where they are saying, on our own, we can't survive, and we're beginning to see consolidation. Western Europe, Northern Europe coming together to form joint companies to survive the current climate. Now, the South African defense industry is not immune to that. It too is going to have to begin to address those challenges if we want to survive. And I'm aware that our companies are busy engaging in those discussions. There are issues of operational improvement, Chairperson. The focus is to improve efficiency and productivity by putting in place productivity management system, development of information management strategy. The board has adopted the information technology renewal plan as well recently at the strategy session, which we hope will contribute immensely to this objective. Then there are issues of corporate governance. We remain committed to good corporate governance and to ensure compliance with corporate governance principles. We have put in place the following: the shareholder compact, the board charter, committees charters, internal audit plan. We have dealt with corporate risk management plan, and we also have a risk register in this regard. We have a fraud prevention plan. And then, of course, we deal with legislative compliance assessment through the audit that is done by our company secretarial office as well as together with the legal department. Then there has been the issue of stakeholder relations, which we think is a matter that has over the years dogged the organization. It's a matter that we believe is critical for AMSCO going forward. We have, in a much more detailed document, identified who the stakeholders are. But what we're really trying to do, Chairperson, is to say that we're all players in the common economy, the aspect of defense, that the outcomes that we want should be the outcomes that make us increasingly better as a country. So whilst we may have different ways in which we contribute to that, but we need to share a common vision in this regard, and we want to carry every player in the defense industry to that end. So we will therefore begin the process of we have adopted a strategy on stakeholder engagement, which takes into account all the stakeholders defined, streamlining communication strategies to enhance stakeholder relations, creating positive image of the defense industry. When people talk about defense, they just see, they think of scandals, corruption, and so on. We got to see it as part of the economy of our country and see it as an industry that addresses the strategic needs of the country. So we have to work towards changing the mindset with regard to these things. What then are the challenges that are faced? We just list the three major challenges for us. That one, the first one is that of securing sufficient funding to run this organization and to run the Department of Defense. Secondly, is the challenge of responding to the critical skills needs in this industry, because if we want to professionalize our defense industry, we do need to have people with the necessary skills,
system to run this organization. Of course, related to that would be the succession planning. Then we have to deal with the challenge of the sustainability of the defense industry. We've got to say, is this industry sustainable? In our last strategy discussion, we said, we see a number of little companies. You have like 20 companies, all of them competing to make uniforms for the army, for the police, and so on. We will never have enough to give to all of them to run sustainable business. Of course, a number of them are trying also to manufacture for export, but they are small organizations. So there has to be a paradigm shift. People must begin to think of measures and consolidation of businesses in order to survive. They've got to begin to do that. So Chairperson, in brief, that is what we have prepared as a board. They are really the strategic issues and actions that we have taken. There are details in the annual report, and I think there are some questions that may arise, which I would ask my colleagues to deal with. You may want Chairperson to maybe allow us to deal with some of the questions that were outstanding before, maybe, so that by the time we discuss, we've gotten them out of the way. But I ask Mr. Musili to deal with all the HR issues about them.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll probably just have questions if there are issues on the HR side that are outstanding. In our mind, I think we've dealt with most of the issues which were outstanding from the previous time. And the Ms. Boroto issue has been settled. She's now gainfully employed in a new position. I'm not aware that there could be other issues, but if the committee has issues, I'm happy to deal with them.
Right, Chairperson, there were other things. We will not deal with the A400 matter because that is now the matter. Close, we have dealt with it. It has been reported to the Joint Standing Committee and Portfolio Committee by myself and the Minister last week. The report that was well received. There was a matter on the restraint of trade, Mr. Sibi, which we understand was raised as an issue. We were not here. I think I'm sure the committee would like to hear from the board.
I think let me address that. Thank you, Chairperson. Most of the members of the board, with the exception of our chairperson and Mr. Mayor, have really been on the committee for just over a year. So we found the CEO in his job. He had been employed 10 years before we arrived as a CEO. We didn't find the contract that employed the CEO. We decided to start drafting a contract because it's proper in this matters that the CEO should have a proper contract. And part of the provisions of the contract that we're seeking from the CEO was to change the terms of his employment. And a couple of issues there. One is he almost had a lifetime employment, so he has this letter that makes him CEO forever. We thought we need to have terms that would allow us to terminate his contract should we find his performance not to be in order. We put a clause in the contract that says the contract will be terminated by 3 months' notice by other party. So that is one of the conditions we had to change. One of the other things we looked at was, from time to time, institutions get embarrassed by chief executives who award a big contract to another company and then after 2 months go and join the company. So we wanted to restrict the CEO from working after he leaves arms call with any of our suppliers for a specific period. That really meant that we had to restrain him from doing what he would otherwise do as a man who has worked in the defense industry for over 10 years. And for that, there had to be a consideration for that restraint. So we structured the restraint in a manner that would give him part of the payment upfront and the balance of the payment at the end of the restraint period. And that's really the issue in that case. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, there was the matter of the appointment of the deputy chair of the board, which is the requirement of the law. That has been discussed by the previous and the current minister. I'm expecting that the minister by now would have sent a letter to my office. There is no dispute. I think the matter that should be finalized in the next couple of days or weeks. Most of the things have been dealt with. We were asked also to report on the fistula, the outcome of the disciplinary hearing, and I think I'll ask Mr. Mkwanazi and Mr. Msini to deal with that one as well.
Following the report that was done after the investigation, we took the recommendation of coming out of the investigation in terms of what corrective action was supposed to be done, divided them into two. We divided it into the process, corrected the process as it was required according to the recommendation of the investigation. And according to the recommendation of the investigation, there were employees that are supposed to be disciplined. And what we found as well was that some of the employees that are supposed to be disciplined had already left the organization. The organization was left with three individuals that were still with the organization that we needed to take disciplinary action against. And as it was requested that we ensure that we follow the internal processes of AMSCO in terms of our policies and practices. We followed it we appointed an independent presiding officer, and the charges were laid. And in terms of presenting that the evidence, according to the outcome of the presiding officer, it was stated that the evidence as presented was not good enough to find the people guilty, and the two individuals were procedurally found not to be guilty. And as management, we tried to appeal against that decision of the presiding officer. And we took an advice from a senior counsel. And based on the fact that the outcome was such that, according to the senior counsel, we couldn't do an appeal because of the manner in which the evidence was presented. So we advise that we cannot appeal the case because of the way it was handled, and as a result, then we had to close the net and give a report to the HR committee of the board as well as to the board of the board of directors. What came out as problems in terms of presenting the evidence the evidence that was prepared, the people who were charging the accused, they didn't use the sufficient information that was prepared to be used. And also in terms of the witnesses that we used, one of the witnesses that was used turned against the person who was putting the cases and supported the accused. And as a result, then the presiding officer found that based on that, then there was really no reason to find the people guilty because the witnesses sent and became a hostile witnesses against the person who was presenting the case. And this is how the decision came that then they were not found guilty.
I'll give you an opportunity to engage into questions. The CEO is still not here. They're still trying to get hold of him. Nobody knows where he is. They were with him last night in the hotel, and this morning he has not made it to this committee. So he is not here. So what we are saying is that most questions would be handled by the collective of the board and with Mr. Mukwana. I don't know when will he ever arrive to come and give clarity. We'll decide by then that how we handle his matter. But in front of me now I have Dr. Mlangeni, and I have Mr. Mlambajo. Is your hands up?
No.
Okay, then I have David. Then I have Tatu Tiaga. Mamupe, Mape. And then David. That's how it is going to go. Tatu Mlangeni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I can assure you that this time I'm not going to make any demands on AMSCO except to thank the leadership for this presentation, which to me is very clear and speaks for itself. According to AMSCO annual report, funding has decreased during this current financial year, and this might compromise the mandate of the organization. You yourself present a very similar picture in your strategic overview. Now, the question which I would like to ask is, do you believe that the 2009 midterm budget policy statement is sufficient for your strategic overview, financial needs, the first one, and the second one is whether you would consult the Minister of Finance and National Treasury to appeal for more funding for the growth of your industry. Those are the two questions I would like to ask. Thank you very much. Otherwise, the presentation was good. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. My understanding is that the Arms Corps Board is responsible for management and control. And I understand, and with respect, the Chairman produced, this is an introduction meeting, and the presentation was at a strategic level. But it seems to me that we need to tackle the problems of management in Arms Corps. Now, it seems to me that a key problem in Arms Corps is the CEO of Arms Corps. There is a very serious question in the papers, and this matter was raised at our last committee meeting, about the CEO's management and leadership style. The board found, in fact, that was the case and advised that the CEO received counseling. The CEO is also, or was, undergoing disciplinary hearings in respect of a sexual harassment case. Under the tenure of the CEO, there was a sexual harassment case that cost the taxpayer more than 1.8 million rand to resolve and played out, it seems, over about 2 years. The CEO in our last meeting seemed to indicate that he thought that being CEO of Arms Corps was a part-time job. He had directorships in more than 10 other entities and told us that he enjoyed trading shares on the weekends. Now, it would seem to me that the leadership and the management of the CEO is a significant problem. And it would be exactly the kind of problem that the board would be responsible for solving. And yet it seems that that's exactly what the board has not done. The board's response to the problem has been to, in fact, retain the services of the CEO, to set up a new contract, to pay performance bonuses, to pay restraint of trade payments. And it seems that the board has not dealt with this. Now, what I would want to know from the chairperson is, does this board have confidence in the chief executive officer of Arms Corps? Because I don't know the mind of the minister, but it appears to me that the minister does not have confidence in the CEO. I don't have confidence in the CEO. And I cannot understand how it is that the board has confidence in the CEO.
I think I
went
to I
did qualify my remark.
Okay.
I don't know the mind of the minister, but based on her remark, I insert that she does not have confidence in the CEO. And I want to know, the chairperson, with respect, do you have confidence in the CEO of Arms Corps? And if you do, why? And if you don't, what are you doing about it? Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I was to say I'm not happy that the CEO is not here, but I'm happy now that he's present. He's present. You know, the reason is why I'm going to be that this is the end of the year, so that they are supported here. I'm happy that the is here, Mr. Tom. Now, I do welcome the presentation by the chairperson of the board. Now, my question is that the Arms Corps has a relationship with the stakeholders. Of course, it's important to create, to have a relationship with the but now, what are those? What are those stakeholders that Arms Corps has? The chairperson, in his presentation, mentioned that there is a document available. If it is there, you should provide us with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation from the board. My question is based on page 6, human resources. To address this challenge, certain strategies are put in place. Now, the board has also indicated that they are giving out bursaries. I would like to know how much is the amount of those bursaries and how many students are benefiting from those bursaries and in which area. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Stephen. My first comment, I would die if I wouldn't make this one. Go to the Honorable Mr. Tomo. I don't understand how the CEO of Arms Corps uses our money to fly to Cape Town so that he can attend this meeting called for 9 o'clock. He sleeps in the hotel using our money. He arrives in this meeting late. Nobody knows. But I guess the board will have to take decisions on that. That we can't appreciate. We feel we are being undermined, Mr. Thomas. In fact, I think I'm noting this for the second time. I concluded also on your appearance at the last PC meeting. You have to take us seriously. Whoever you are in your position remains the issue. Here we are portfolio committee members representing the public. Unfortunately, you are accountable to us by virtue of you being the CEO of that armed group that you are responsible for. I will then go to the board members in front of us. You will have to bear with me. I'm new in the committee. So if I'm asking questions that you feel they're unnecessary, but they're necessary for me so that I'm able to perform my oversight role, I have to understand everything. I see, although I arrived late also, that there are board members here, but I want to ask one question. How are they constituted? Who appoints them? If it's the minister, what's the term of office and everything for the board? From there, based on the presentation, as my colleagues have alluded on the issue of the budgetary constraint that you also mentioned on the challenges, how do you decide what is good for South Africa and what is it that we need as the South African National Defence Force? Do you undergo a needs assessment or what? Or is that a money-making thing that this time we feel we don't have money, that let's go and issue some arms? And also, as you have mentioned that you have a problem of funding, how do we then seek to address that? Do you engage with the Minister of Treasury and Finance, or you just sit there and tell us what you have funding problem? I will stop there, Sir President.
Don't feel shy. You got all the time to raise any other questions. Now, I've got three members also here. Those of you on a very large board, I must give all of our members an opportunity so that you can have an opportunity. I'll start with you, Mr. Lorima, Mr. Kekana, and Dr. Dolo. I'll take a look.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to interrogate the Vistula issue some more. I'm still unclear as to exactly what the charges were, so can you give us an explanation as to exactly what the charges were? I'd like to know whether there was a report drawn up on this issue, and if so, whether we'd be able to have access to it.
Mr. Lerima, is that on the Vistula?
Vistula, yes.
Vistula, yes.
That's correct. And thirdly, it seems that the process to hold people responsible has been effectively bungled. I want to know who's taking responsibility for that.
Can you repeat your question? The last part.
The last part of the disciplinary action in respect to Vistula appears to have been bungled. Nobody in the end seems to have been found responsible. And there seems to be a weakness in the personnel policies of the organization. So I'd like to know who's responsible for the bungle and what's being done about it.
I want to know on funding, AMSCO, whether it is wholly self-sustaining or whether it is partially, I would imagine if it produces, it could sell somewhere and make a profit and as a result plow that back. So is it self-sustaining or is it wholly or partially subsidized by the government according to its history?
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. My apology to you, Comrade Chairperson.
You are very earlier than the CEO, so you are on time.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, I just find out on page 8, support of local industrial is one of the board's priority areas. The board is concerned that large percentage of tenders go to foreign companies. I just want to ask Comrade Chairperson, who is responsible? Because when they say large of this tender, most of them they take to foreign company. I just want to ask who is responsible to take that decision, or I'm not sure
to ignore the local car company to give those centers? Who is responsible? That's the
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, also my apologies for coming late, but I'm relieved to hear that. Well, it's also on the question of this large portion of tenders being given to foreign companies. I just wanted to know exactly what is the board doing to actually address this, because clearly we are... I don't see any evidence of empowerment for our own local companies to be able to actually perform these kind of functions. And that, yeah, I will end there for now.
Yeah, it's also a follow-up on the same question. That's a very relevant question. When our local companies... not benefiting. That's why is it that the foreign companies have that we don't have in this country?
Thank you, Chair. Mine goes to human resources. On page 6, I see you have a challenge of attracting young talent. But then this one is an advice that maybe it would be proper for you to work with the National Youth Development Agency that the President announced this year is responsible for that. But then, on your organogram, in the annual report, I can see there's lots of actors, which is a concern to me. I don't understand. How about three general managers, if I'm correct? They are all acting. Doesn't that hinder the program or the implementation of whatever program that you are supposed to do? That's it.
You, Mr. Popo, and you fill your board to answer most questions.
That's one. On the Airbus, an update, please. On the progress, we were supposed to be given back our money. Just we want to have the progress on that one. Thank you.
Can I give over to Mr. Molif and the whole team to you separate how you are going to answer? I think the CEO, you do know that you'll answer to the chairperson of the board because we don't know where you were and we are proceeding with our meeting. Whatever you've got in, your chairperson, you left have sent you, where were you?
All right, thank you very much. Let me start with the last question. My term will end soon. Let me say, as the minister was announcing in the joint standing committee of defense and veterans, the team of Arms Corps, the day before, had already met with OCA as required by the contract provisions to consult. Of course, it was one of the many consultations that had been taking place. But at that point, they were really saying to them, now the board has decided to terminate. When the minister announced on Thursday, they were meeting with the AMSL Airbus, again written them, of course we had also written a letter to them under the signature of the CEO. In terms of those discussions, our team then gave them 60 days within which the money should be paid to us. So we will continue with those processes. We still are determined to recoup our 2.9 billion rand. So that's where we are. We were asked the question about penalties at the Joint Standing Committee, and at that point I said, things being equal, yes, we would claim penalties, but I needed to go back to the contract to read the fine letter. I subsequently consulted with our legal advisor and the chief of acquisition. And they made it clear that when the board asked management not to pay, because there was that time when we thought we might actually be putting money there and lose a lot of money in the end if they refused to pay, so we said don't pay. Part of the money that we kept back were the penalties that they would have had to pay for the critical milestone, which was the first flight on, I think it was the 31st of January 2018. It was supposed to happen, that time it didn't happen. So we have back. So we don't have any further penalties to claim from this. I'd like to give, may I ask Mr. Musibi to deal with all the HR matters, him and Mr. Mbada. So, you want me to deal with it? I can do so, but I think you should do so.
I just need to address a couple of things. I think it's quite clear we understand our role to be
that of oversight and strategic direction and management. We've been concerned about a number of issues in the organization, and one of them is transformation, both gender and appointment of previously disadvantaged persons in the organization. But I think we must remember, AMSCO is an old organization, so it has a history which some of us are not happy with, but nevertheless it's got that history and it's got positions that have current people in those positions. And we have programs to try and replace most of our senior staff. As we've said, that 70% of our staff could be classified as people almost over 50 years old, I think. The majority of our people are quite old. So the challenge is to find the right skills to put in those positions, because a number of these people possess tremendous experience and skill and technical know-how. I was trained as an engineer a few years ago, over 10 years ago, but I just know that even my knowledge is dangerous in engineering. I would not be able to do some of the stuff that these guys are able to do. So it's a country challenge, to put it that way. We have difficulty in training engineering students at all our universities. I mean, 2 years ago, South Africa produced 3,200 engineers, when China produced over 200,000 engineers in 1 year. So that's a challenge. And the other challenge is to keep these young guys in these positions. Engineering is a very boring career. I did it for 10 years in my life. It doesn't pay as well as you would be paid as a lawyer or as an accountant. So it is a challenge. Nevertheless, we have budgets to address it. We're looking at how we can have people in the positions shadowing the other people and put the transfer and deal with transforming the organization. It's true there are issues of leadership in the organization which we're tackling. There were a number of vacant positions. We've just filled the position of GM HR. Solomzi has just been appointed, I think, some 2 months ago. He's finding his feet. The position of CEO was going to be an issue, and that was the whole reason to look at his contract and deal with it in the manner that we dealt with. It wasn't to pay him a restraint because of his capabilities. It was to change the contract to put the shareholder in a better position, because the shareholder was not in a better position for the previous situation. We have issues. That's why I would probably restrain from discussing the CEO further, other than to say we are having discussions as a board with the CEO. The issue of sexual harassment was the issue of Ms. Borot, which was dealt with. There was a disciplinary hearing which exonerated the CEO. But out of that, the CEO had to undergo some kind of training on how to deal with gender-sensitive issues and also just how to lead an organization. I took the trouble to introduce him to an organization called Talentline, which specializes in coaching CEOs across Standard Bank and many other organizations. And they attempted to work with the CEO, but nothing came out of it because he was reluctant, for reasons unknown to me, to engage in that direction. So I would say the issue of the sexual harassment has been dealt with. The issue of how many students we have in the program, I'll let management deal with that. But needless to say, it's insufficient what we spend. It's just not enough. And we are aware that there's more need to be spent. But we also need to be careful that we don't...
Well, I have said to Mr. Msibi Chair that these are contractual matters between the employer and the employee. But I can take the committee and the confidence and say we, as a board, full board, probably in the absence of only one member, we met with the CEO. And we have told him that as far as we are concerned, for as long as he's there as the CEO, he's taking all of us down. We're all going down.
the organization can move to the next level, we need new ideas, we need new blood. We have asked him to resign so that we conclude this thing amicably. We had asked him to come back to us on the, usually come back to me on Saturday. Well, when he didn't come, I thought maybe he thinks that 3 days means 3 working days. So I said, probably he'll come back to me on Monday. So he hasn't done so. So we now would have to look at what options are open to us. But we agree with you that the board has arrived at that conclusion. And then we're dealing with it.
Can I rule that we keep it at that level now? That is that the board has at least moved a step, you know, to at least hint us about what they're doing. Let's leave it at that level. And one comment.
Chair, I think the chairperson of the board and the board have reached the right decision, and I hope that we can terminate this matter and move on as quickly as possible.
It does say that we do have confidence in the board, and we are quite happy in the manner that they handle the issues. So it does mean that they do listen to Parliament, you know, the issues that we want them to raise. So let's leave it at this level now. And leave it in the capable hands of the board, but we'll keep our eyes on this particular matter. So it then means that we can proceed to other issues that have been raised. And in the meantime, we can come ask the CEO to come back and sit here. But the issue now, we won't go into it extensively. We'll close it at this level. Thank you. Proceed with other issues.
Right. You're making my work difficult, right?
No,
it's a legal issue. And I think on this tune, I will probably get management to give us more. I must just point out that there's a point we were very disappointed by the manner in which this matter was dealt with. Because it was clear that there was a problem in the way that the evaluation was done, because the companies involved had all failed a specific criteria. But somehow the executives, not the executives, but the people concerned tend to overlook that and put the conversion into discipline. But once the matter was dealt with through the internal processes, the board expressed its satisfaction and asked the HR committee to investigate if there were still further grounds for holding someone responsible. We looked at the reports prepared by the lawyers and the way the inquiry was conducted, and we felt that we were not in a position to punish the members of staff who were involved, because that would really prejudice the others. So I would think squarely the organization didn't handle it very well, and also that reflects on some of the issues we've discussed in the closed session today. So let me leave that. The board appointment, maybe just to close this, for the honorable member, is appointed by the minister. And then the board then organizes itself to committees that tend to deal with day-to-day issues. So we have HR, we have risk, we have audit, and so on, to try and deliver the mandate in a manner that we find fit to deal with. Sure, but let me get quickly, maybe the HR manager talk to us about our bursary scheme and how many students we have and how much you spend on it. And maybe just reflect on how funding is going to affect your programs.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. We currently have two parallel programs that seek to address the issues of attraction of skills. We've got the bursary scheme, where we fund students for tertiary education, mainly looking at areas where we've got the highest shortage, that would be in your engineering, technical environment. So we are currently funding 6 students. They are mainly at universities. We are spending 200,000. That's the budget for those 6 students. Then we've got another parallel program that is running. That is the graduate program, where we take on board recently qualified graduates on a contract basis for a period of 24 months, where we expose them to some of our areas, or they will work with a particular department and gain that experience. The idea is to try and retain those graduates after that period of 24 months. For that program, the budget is in there, I think it's over 2 million. Because, of course, that informs their salary, and we also pay for their medical and pension. So I think that those are the two schemes. And I think that is on par with what the industry and the market is currently doing. But obviously, the challenge will always be there once they qualify. You always have a threat from our competitors in that sense, the heavy, engineering field, where they will poach some of the students. But I think we can do better. I agree with the honorable member, where we need to find synergies with other, institutions and really, leverage on that. And I think the idea coming from the past, from my own assessment, has been the situation to say there is a budget, so therefore let's just recruit. But there is no foresight to then say, how can we, get value from what we have and partner with other institutions so to make sure that we also address, critical areas from our strategic, challenges. So I think we're currently under discussion to say, how can we, with the limited resources that we have, but also try to maximize the benefits and making sure that even if it means you fund a student up to 80% so as to stretch your rent. So these are some of the issues that we need to look into. And again, the challenge is around to say, how do you mentor and from a management perspective to make sure that there is progress and even maybe shorten the duration. Instead of taking 24 months, you could get this graduate ready within the period of 18 months where you really give them tangible projects so as to make sure that you assess them adequately. So these are some of the challenges that we are currently looking at. I'm busy meeting with my team, and I'll be presenting to the board to say, moving forward, this is the best strategy, and also what are other companies doing, and then we can learn from that. And I think, in a nutshell, that's the position on the issue of fertility.
Thank you.
The process has been gradual. Maybe the CEO could talk to this position. As I said, the HR GM has now been appointed fully. There might still be other positions which, because the way the committee do, we receive these requests from management and deal with them. So maybe let the CEO just deal with those questions if you don't answer.
Thank you, Chair, and sorry for being late. The issue of the acting GMs, while the Mr. Msibi has indicated that the GM for HR has been appointed, now there are two positions which are still outstanding. And the one position we could not fill because there was earlier, the minister wanted us. I wanted part of AMSCO to become a dairy. Mm. And yes, Defense Evaluation and Research Institute. Yes.
Yes.
No. The one position we couldn't fill because the individual who was occupying that position passed away, and it was envisaged that part of the business would, that part of the organization would probably be combined with the CSIR and managed separately from AMSCO. So for that reason, we couldn't fill that position without us knowing what's going to happen. And other than that, there's one other position which we are currently filling now. So those are the three. Thank you.
Well, I'm juggling around, Chairperson. We were asked the question whether we think the 209 to 10 budget is adequate. May I ask Mr. Khoblo to deal with that one? And whether we have approached Minister of Finance in that regard.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we have a deficit. We have budgeted for a deficit for 2019, and our position currently is still a deficit position. So the process that we do follow is to request additional funding through the DoD, through the Department of Defense, but I mean they are also pressed for finance in their own environment. So currently we don't see that a deficit will be totally totally be handled through that budget. That's also why we started to look at different models and funding models to sort of see how we can motivate what the funding is to sort of make provision for different workloads and that type of thing. So, but we still have a deficit budget for the current year and for the next year.
The Honorable Diale asked who are the stakeholders. Do we have a list where we have a document where we have listed the stakeholders? Ms. September, do you have that list or should I deal with it?
Thank you. Good day to you, all honorable members of the committee. AMSCO has identified key stakeholders within the industry, and that would include the Ministry of Defense, the Defense Secretariat, the SANDF, us as the Board of Directors, Parliament indeed, the defence industry as a whole, other government departments, be it Treasury, DPE, DST, DTI, the employees who are employed within the structure of AMSCO, unions, and the media.
Yeah, mine is on the issue of unions. Which unions are we talking about? What are their purchase stakeholders? And secondly, another question that I asked previously, but when you take a decision to get more arms for our country or our defense force, do you do a needs analysis? Do you take into consideration the parties involved, the political implications and financial implications? Thanks.
We still have questions. We'll come into that question. It's a separate question.
Of course, we have been asked to manage the stockyard as a strategic asset. Of course, there were normal units. I think it's the house. The union is normal.
So we're dealing with those. Within AMSCO itself, we have unions, Solidarity, and others within AMSCO, and HAWE as well within AMSCO. Those are the unions. And then, of course, any other union that we may have to interact with to make our way in whatever industry that we have something to do with.
Mr.
May I ask Mr. Mkwanazi to deal with that? The determination of strategic needs for the South African National Defence. How do we determine the need?
The determination of the requirements. The needs are defined by our clients, which is the SNDF, based on their own analysis in terms of their scenarios. Once they've defined that in different arms of services, it be the Army, it be the Air Force, it be the Navy, and then the rest, the SEMS and the rest, they would define their requirements based on their analysis of what is required for the SNDF, and also based on the affordability in terms of what they have in the budget. And then that is then given to AMSCO in terms of the priorities as to what needs to be acquired, and we have to follow that accordingly.
Appoint the board, Mr. Msiako, can you tell me that?
Yes,
I would.
Yes.
Oh, we've dealt with the board. Okay, I'm sorry. Getting older. Honorable Kekana has asked whether AMSCO is self-sustaining or whether it depends on grants, handouts, and so on. Mr. Michel.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member. AMSCO, as it is right now, it's not a commercial institution. So it does not do business to get funding from anywhere else. It is purely acting on behalf of the government to procure whatever the needs of the defense forces. So it is not definitely not self-funding.
Then there was we were advised, of course, that in our endeavor to attract youth talent, we should work with the NDA. We will do so. National Youth Development Agency, NYDA. So we will engage them to share with them. So we'd have to define them as one of the stakeholders that we will talk to about this matter. Okay. On three honorable members raised the question around this 70-30% imbalance in terms of contract. Mr. Tomo, would you please deal with that, Mr. CEO? If there's anything to be added. No, let me start with Mr. Mcibi, because we took a specific decision as a board on the emphasis on the domestic supply.
The chairperson is right. We've been concerned about, it's a historical fact that if you look at our major equipment, because of issues in the past, was procured from large European, mainly European suppliers, be it the Airbus, the submarines, and all the major equipment. So that's a historical fact. The problem is that our industry, specifically denied and others, therefore started suffering because we had programs that we had embarked on as a country, some before the change, which had equipment that could have been used by us, but nevertheless it wasn't used. So we said to management, this is an area of focus for us. If you look at the local South African defense industry, most of the companies are involved mainly in what we call intellectual property. We're developing mostly IT-based either guiding systems or that type of technology. When we also have, if you look what the Americans have got, that helicopter, that plane that cannot be detected, that goes and take pictures in Iraq and direct bombs and take targets. We do have that capability in Tunnel Dynamics. So there needs to be a concerted effort from all the stakeholders, including the portfolio committee, parliament, government, to deliberately favor local industry. Because these things cannot happen in the vacuum. We need our defense force, when they specify equipment, to specifically want to use local equipment. And the history in the past has been to use the suppliers who've been in the system for far too long. When we get the tenders, we're told they are the only supplier. And those problems will happen. In engineering, you find a guy who designs a car, says, only Mr. X can look after my car. Unless we as a country take a stand and say, this is not acceptable, we would like you to get some local people to do this, we'll never be able to change it. So it's not something the board alone can achieve. What we can achieve is to develop a strategy to analyze our own procurement, to see where we think there's opportunity for the local industry, and then really market this to the Secretary of Defense, to the Defense Force, to Parliament, to the public, to pressurize the powers that be to make sure that when these things come, we deliberately support the local industry. It is a difficult thing to achieve. The chairperson has mentioned that a lot of our companies, five of them would make uniforms. I mean, when we went to one of the exhibitions, there are a lot of South African companies there, but five would be exhibiting uniforms, protective gear, and the other three would be dealing with goggles or something that insignificant in terms of the technological input and shift in how the world is going. So it's not an easy one. I think if the CEO has to comment, is to comment how far we are in terms of segmenting the industry, in terms of identifying the players and the skills base that we have in South Africa, which then will come to us and decide in consultation with the department and the minister how we proceed in this direction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Msibi. Mr. CEO, do you want to add something about what we are doing to progress in this direction?
No, there's not much to add, Chair. We are just looking at how we could capacitate the industry within the realms of the law. And in other countries, the governments take a particular emphasis and make laws on how the industry should be protected. But in our case, that is not the case. So we're just looking at how we work around, you know, on those issues. But what Mr. Msibi has said is, I think, it's a macro. Thank you.
Chair, what this thing may well mean is that in our quest to promote the local defense industry, we may have to look at a range of legislative pieces and to see if there are any
provisions in those laws which militate against the strategic priority. And at that point, when we have identified that, we would then, of course, ask the minister maybe to propose certain amendments to the law to enable us to achieve our objective. And of course, the portfolio committee will play a very important role in that regard. When we discussed this question, management were saying to us, hey, but you know the Public Finance Management Act says the procurement must be open, transparent, and so on. Yeah, we agree it has to be like that. But if that means, then you would not be able to support your local industry. You would have to look at what are those elements in the law that makes it difficult. Of course, we must also say that in promoting the industry, it is not at all costs. We are not saying go for low-quality product because you in the name of promoting industry, because in the end, our defense force, our clients must have the quality of a product that they can use to achieve their objective. So we will bear that in mind. But we will not compromise where there is good quality in the country, but we want to go and buy elsewhere, initially because they say the price is lower, when in fact the whole question of life cycle, full life cycle maintenance is going to actually keep escalating because the product is from elsewhere. So we would take that into account and make sure that management and the board implement policy aggressively in that regard.
I assume that we would then have dealt with the because those questions were similar. You know, these three honourable members who spoke on that question. I think we have answered all of them. I think I have dealt with all the questions.
Fine. So I'm going to reopen. Have they not addressed your question at all?
Yes.
Or you want to come up with a new question?
No, probably just answer my question correctly.
Can you repeat your question
at all? Yes. Yes. Yes.
My question, Chairperson, is that the board is concerned that large percentage of tenders go to foreign companies. Now, my question is that who is responsible? Is the board responsible to just go and certain case alone, or is the minister, or is the president? Who is responsible?
Thanks, Chair President. The minister and the president don't do this work. Procurement is the work of AMSCO. The determination of the capability needed comes from the DOD. Of course, they work with the experts in AMSCO as well. They make up their mind. They need something that can make them achieve certain things. And then they would say to AMSCO, can you scan the market and see if this technology does exist and where does it exist? AMSCO will do that. Quite often, they find that it doesn't exist in South Africa. It exists outside the country. That's when then they would go there. But they might find that that technology has got a range of elements. There are some components of that equipment that could be provided by our local companies. We were talking about the A400, our industry are doing a lot of work for the A400 because they've got the capability in respect of certain components of that product. Now, I am going to ask Mr. Mkhwanazi and Chris to explain this thing because it is
It is not an easy thing. It may well be a legacy of the past, but it may also be the problem of the nature of technology and the stage at which we are in South Africa in respect of those technological needs. Mr. Mkhonazi would deal with that.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the reason why the bulk of our spend is overseas, it's basically because of the process as is right now, as the chairman has indicated, that we go through a process of scanning the market and getting those required technologies, depending where we find the technologies. However, we also use what we call value systems as part of our processes in terms of determining where are we going to acquire those skills. But what we find is that when we acquired our defense packages, we were acquiring platforms. So you tend to find that those platforms were acquired in other countries. As a result now, having our spend major coming from that foreign company. However, on those platforms, you tend to find that there are systems or subsystems that are manufactured in South Africa. I think this is why we are saying as we go in terms of this in dealing with the acquisition, we need to insist during our negotiations that we get a bulk of the work being done in South Africa so that we benefit more. We sort of shift that around in terms of the money that goes overseas compared to the money that is spent locally. An example, for instance, if you look at the major systems like the Hawk aircraft, the avionics are manufactured in South Africa. But we need to increase that to be more. And hence we are saying, as the chairman was explaining, that in terms of the strategy, we need to involve a vast number of stakeholders. The industry needs to be involved. The legislation needs to be looked at in terms of how we then empower the local industry. Also, the industry itself, it has to be looked into in terms of the performance in the industry, the technology that is there, increasing their partnerships, as well as also looking at what we discussed earlier on, such as joint ventures with other companies, so that we realize those competitive edge that are required to be in a position to play in those kind of markets. So it's a number of things that needs to be looked at in terms of turning this around. But yes, it's historically because we're buying major systems, submarines, the aircraft, the frigates, and those systems were acquired overseas. The series are then the spend tend to be more overseas as compared to local. But out of that, like I indicated, that there were lessons learned. So we say strategically we can look at those lessons learned in terms of improving our local industry in terms of the way we go forward as we do this acquisition, looking at a number of things as it has been presented.
Going to a new round of questions now. And I just hope the chairperson is asking to go out quickly. He's coming. Not going to disappear like the CEO. Can I have you, Mr. Kekana? And then after Mr. Kekana, I'll have you, David.
Yes.
Okay. You got the chairperson.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Chair. When you speak about this last issue, you don't know how much you are exciting us, as quiet as we are, but our hearts are pumping already, because this is the key thing for Pan-African Parliament, DPAC, South Africa, to break the structure of economic relationship, where the first world reproduce conditions of underdevelopment in Africa. We've spoken about beneficiation policies are there, that gradually we want to move away and break from this dependency and do things and compete with them as equal partners in the world. I mean, the whole of Africa is underdeveloped, poverty, unemployment. Though raw material is there, riches, natural riches, but the people who benefit are overseas, and we who are here can hardly make the best ultimate benefit out of our raw material. So that issue, if you could identify as soon as possible the legislation that needs to be changed. I see there's a research wing already to AMSCO, which is important, and skills development, therefore engineers. Those are all important things for this country. And whether you are in trade and industry, in mining, this issue of capturing our own resources and using our own money as much as possible internally is key, because you break in the structure of dependency. So we'd like you to come back to us as soon as possible. I mean, in 15 years, this should have been done a long time. I would say not just where there's ready capability to produce quality goods, even where there's potential, where you realize we can give these guys, after 5-10 years, they'll reach the required standard. So this is key and fundamental, and share out as that we get the report and the kind of legislation that AMSCO would like us to support to change.
David Mean.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move on from my previous line of questioning to look at some of the acquisition programs. And I refer to page 20 of the annual report. Let me begin with the question about the acquisition of the MECO A200 frigates. In the document, it says that a number of engineering changes are presently being executed in order to address a number of identified safety and operational requirements to meet requirements which were omitted from the original contract because of budget restraints at the time. These will take the project well into 2010. I would ask through the chairperson that somebody on the board decode that paragraph and explain what changes were executed and what were the requirements that were omitted at the time of acquisition. I'd like to then move to the GBAD system on page 22, where it says the program has executed over 30 contractual milestones, but there were serious delays resulting in a total program slip of 47 months. Now, what accounts for that, and what corrective action is being taken? I then move to the acquisition of the new generation infantry combat vehicle, where again there's reference to fairly significant delays. Again, what explains that, and what corrective action is taken. Chair, that's not my last question, but I'll leave it. This will be my second last question then, Chair. Can I then move to the section which deals with NIPS and DIPS?
Should the honourable member mentioned the frigates, the keepers, and I just missed the third one.
The new generation infantry combat vehicle and the delay. Can I continue, Chair? Then on the NIP and DIP section of the document, there's again, in respect of the MECO A200 frigates, there's reference to Matra BAE Dynamics Alenia not complying with certain DIP obligations and corrective action being taken, which is set out in the document. My question there is, why did they fail to comply, and what in fact were their DIP obligations, and why was it necessary to take the corrective action which you have taken? And my last question is in respect of page 54 of the report, which makes reference to litigation in the civil court of Lisbon. And I'd like to know exactly what that is in respect of. And Chair, if you indulge me, I do have a final question, which I think is of some import. But it will be a final question. It will be a final question. Chair, I'd like to come to the Airbus A400. And the chairperson has given us an update. I'm satisfied with that update. But the acquisition of the Airbus A400 raises a question about policy. Does the Department of Defense and Arms Corps have a policy setting out how major capital acquisition programs ought to take place? And I ask that because I want to be convinced that in formulating such a policy, we've looked at what went wrong with the acquisition in the SDP program, and we've learned some lessons. And also equally that we've looked at what went wrong, possibly, or at least we're going to commit to look at, what went wrong in respect of the acquisition of the Airbus A400, and that we would include those lessons learned in a policy on how it is we ought to go about acquiring major capital items for our defense force. I'm done, Chair.
On the last question, you do know that most of the information we have in front of us is that this was a cabinet decision that went straight to every other person, but it doesn't still say that. Yeah, no, I'm just saying that if they are not able to go into that detail, don't complain. I mean, you know exactly the nature of that particular one. But if there are lessons to be learned, or you make your point here. Can I give Mamunda this?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine goes to... Oh, okay. I've seen your presentations and whatever, but I'm not sure if you ever presented a plan, an annual plan, outside the Department of Defense's one. If you did, if you do have that annual plan, does it talk to the... This is the report, not the plan. In front of me. All right. Chairperson, you will talk when you're sharing your meeting. This one. This.
Yeah.
Hey, the other side. All right. Okay. I want to be sure if your strategic priorities are aligned to the Department of Defense as well. The key priorities that the department has identified, does your organization align your priorities based on that one? And also, do you really think it's practical that you are going to implement it in the stated time frame? Going through your report again, I see on your BEE spending, you have a target of 40% that you're supposed to reach. But then apparently you didn't. If you can tell us the challenge that you are facing, what led to that, your failure to apply that. I would make follow up later.
You see, because also you have to talk to the local industry and that PPEE. What is it that you are talking about that is in that PPEE, which I know that you have said that people are doing overall. And is that what they are really empowering? Because if you are complaining about those, which is that $2 concern about the 70%, where does this PPE assist into taking you forward as a company? If members, and now I've got 3 members here, if there's any other members, see, I don't want to keep you here the whole day if you don't have questions. And I must not keep the board here. The board have honored you, it is here, and I'm giving you time to ask questions. I don't think it's too pressurized to ask questions. But if you don't, it's very nice to keep quiet and I can be able to close the meeting very early. You see, if you don't. But I will give the opportunity now to Dr. Mlangeni to the board to respond to your questions.
Thank you, Comrade Chair.
No, not you. I've not given you yet.
Oh, I thought you'd give me an opportunity.
No, I just saw you eating and raising your hand.
Thank you. Why did you stop me there?
No,
Community chairperson, the one of the core functions of AMSCO is to acquire defense material for the South African Defense Force. Now that the A400 acquisition of that the acquisition of the A400 has been abandoned, are you considering other options?
Getting back to the new generation armored fighting vehicle, the Patria, it was indicated to us last time that phase one had had some setbacks, and that phase two would not be embarked on until phase one was successfully completed. I'd just like a sense of how committed we are to phase two. In the event that phase one does not go ahead satisfactorily, and would we then be looking at an alternative if it doesn't, or are we committed? Have we now sunk so much into it that we have to go for it? And the second thing is, it was indicated to us that because of the financial situation, that this program was also likely to be delayed. So I'd just like an idea of how long for, and do we know when this program will go ahead?
You are in charge when the chairperson are not around, so you would give direction who's going to ask the first question.
Sure.
I think I need to give to Mr. Mkwana and the colleague from the department, from the Defense Force, to just answer the questions raised by Mr. Mina. Just deal with those first, and then we do the others, sure.
The frigate, which was the question of the engineering changes. The two parts of answering that question. As you would understand, that the systems are going through the operational test and evaluation at this point in time. Now, during such exercises, you tend to find issues of reliability that needs to be changed. Certain failures, and if they need to be changed, then you need to institute an engineering change to effect those changes. It's normal in terms of when you run a system. That's the reason why you've got operational tests and evaluation, precisely to get to those failures so that you can correct.
Then the second part, in terms of those that we need due to affordability, as we go through the whole system, complex tend to find that you agree up front what is affordable and what is not affordable. But you do a proper analysis in terms of when you want to acquire those systems, it's going to be cost effective to acquire them later than acquire them at the initial process of acquisition. If it's going to be cost effective, then it is recorded that those will be acquired later. So you find that those were omitted as a result.
Constraints of the budget, which is understood and agreed that is going to be acquired later. In terms of the GBET, the delays of the GBET, as it was reported, the question was, what are the causes of the delays, and how far we are with the corrections. Chair, it was reported that we experienced a problem with the GBET. It is a complex problem as well. Comprises of a number of subsystems, radars, communication systems, command and control systems. What we experienced initially was the problem of the communication system. which couldn't pass the factory acceptance test. And we had to do a lot of work and then to ensure that is achieved. That is basically due to the supplier that couldn't achieve those required specifications as it is stated in the requirement. After they achieved that milestone, we indicated in our reports as well that although they've indicated the period of delay, we're anticipating that in terms of our experience in engineering of such programs, there is a potential risk that it could also, fail during the integration of the whole total system, because they're talking about the software now of trying to communicate with all these number of systems. And we indicated that that could also, if we experience problems with that critical milestone of integrating the total system, then it would cause more delay. And the indications are that now, as we anticipated, they seem to be experiencing problems with the software of the system in terms of the number of subsystems communicating to other systems. As to quantifying the delay, it has not been officially communicated in terms of what they will be looking at. In terms of what is the supplier doing in terms of the corrective actions, a number of corrective actions has been done by DENEL. This program is run by DENEL. They've looked at improving their staff complement. They've looked at also the management. They've got the person who's strictly focusing on managing the GPS to ensure that they improve the situation. So those are corrective actions that have taken place. At my level, we've got regular meetings with the senior management of the NEST to discuss this program, so that I get also feedback and also put a lot of pressure at the higher level of management to ensure that there's improvement in terms of these of these delays. There was also maybe let me just. Okay, that's the next part where there were two questions. In terms of the new generation infantry combat vehicle, we reported that there could be delays of the phase one. As it was explained, that the phase one is to develop and design the five variants of this combat vehicle, with the intention that we achieve what we call a product baseline A. As soon as we have achieved that, we'll be comfortable enough to realize that all those risks in terms of engineering have been mitigated. We are ready now to move to the first phase. This is how we also contracted DENEL in terms of the phase one and the phase two. Meaning that once we have achieved those the five variants, then we'll move into the second phase, which will be the production phase. The suppliers, in this case, DENEL as well, they are experiencing that DENEL and what's now in this case. They started experiencing problems in terms of design and development of the CAM gun. And also there were issues of the communication system that caused the delay on the program. Yeah. And also there were also a number of within DENEL programs, the problems that they're experiencing or challenges that they're experiencing that caused the delay. So far, it has been indicated to us that the delay is going to be to the range of about 6 months or so. And obviously, then, that is going to have an impact in terms of moving to the first, to the second phase, as it was planned and in this stage according to the schedule. So we'll have to revise the schedule in terms of that. And the Honorable Member also touched on the fact that why don't we go to the first phase and what is our commitment in terms of the first phase. As it was reported that the second phase was based on the production. And production has to do with the number of vehicles that will be acquired for the army. That still needs to be finalized by the army in terms of affordability. Is it going to be for two battalions? Is it going to be for three battalions? That needs to be finalized. And also doing that is going to be based on affordability. And in terms of plan, the plan was like that about 56 of these vehicles will be manufactured in Finland, and the rest will be manufactured in South Africa. However, you've got the critical volume that needs to be acquired to realize that plan, which is about 80 units.
it doesn't make any sense manufacture about 30 units only for South Africa, and the 56 are manufactured in around 50 of them are manufactured in Finland. So it has to be around 2 battalions to 3 battalions, and it makes an economic sense to proceed with the plan as it was envisaged. So that is, has to be determined by the army in terms of their affordability as to in which direction they will be going. So unless that is finalized, we're not in a position to say what is the commitment, by when it's going to be finalized, because you need to finalize those priorities as it is determined by the client. I think that is now the new generation. I think those were the four, Chair, so I didn't make any mistake in terms of what I needed to respond to on acquisition.
I don't want to go into the discussion with all the questions you have. So, for my first pick, when you go, this is the one I want to do. I'm going to take this completely. I'm going to take this completely. I think I need this one. I think we can go through the same.
I can see to bring the board around is a very important development. We are getting answers today like never before. Namukika, we want to ask questions?
Go on, can you raise
it?
Okay.
I was still on the floor, Chairperson. I have other questions we needed to attend to first before further questions. So the question on the NIP and SIP programs and the case in Lisbon, and the last one, I think, so the chairperson will respond. Can I get the CEO to respond to the DIP program and the case in Lisbon?
Are you sleeping there, CEO? Can I help you? Can somebody help him there? Don't give him the pressure.
Through the chair, can I just read that? So, can you get Mr. Tifo to a legal person to deal with the case in this point while the CEO is finding his
footing?
On the DIP and the NIP programs, the issues of non-compliance and how we deal with those. CEO, if you didn't get the question. But can you deal with the litigation in this point, Mr. Tifo?
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Member, the matter involves a person who is resident in Portugal, Lisbon, who is claiming a commission on the basis of agency. In short, Honourable Member, what the person is claiming is that he's alleging that in the 1980s he acted as an agent or a middleman on behalf of South Africa in the course of acquisition of armaments. So in fact, that's what the case is all about.
What I say, CEO must come in now. Or he's still looking for the
question. Otherwise, I tell you, Mr. Kobler.
That's quite worrying that he must sleep during this period. Can you get him, sir?
If I can respond on the DIP issue.
Yes,
yeah,
sure.
MBA was part of the...
Sure.
MBA was part of the obligation of Thales Naval. They didn't actually discharge the full obligation, so it was felt that instead of just clearing a penalty, it's going to be better to get the actual obligation discharged. We then split the agreement between Thales Naval and MBA to have a direct link with MBA to get a better leverage on MBA. Because we actually want the obligation discharged. We don't just want to take the penalty. MBDA is currently looking at two different options that will more than discharge their total obligation currently. So there are two options on the table, looking at different areas that will discharge their obligation. The benefit of the country.
I'm sorry. I'm not well, Chairperson, but
I knew that if I were to give an apology, we were going to attack me, so I thought I should just come and die. Chairperson, I just want to deal quickly with the two questions that somebody will deal with: the alignment of AMSCO's priorities to the strategic priorities of the DOD. The question on whether there is policy on acquisition, if there is policy, this policy was revised following the investigations done by the AG and SCOPA. And the third policy was presented to SCOPA, and it took into account the lessons of the SDP. And then I think going forward we would be applying it, just to make sure that we don't fall foul in the future. The second question was whether now that we have cancelled the A4M contract, we have considered the new options. We have not done so yet, but all we can say is that the determination that heavy lifting equipment was a strategic need was not sucked out of the thumb. It's work done by the South African Air Force and the DOD. The need is still there. It is just that at the moment we're in a situation where we are not able to proceed with it, but it is a matter that we'll come back to, I'm sure. The minister did say that we would have to look at it. In coming back, naturally, we'll look at the range of options open to us to meet that strategic need of the South African Air Force. But we are not at that point yet.
Thank you very much.
Can I give the two last, people of Koyan Dabeni and Mini, and then after that, I think we are going to go towards the conclusion of the meeting. Dabeni, I'm giving you a chance. Dabeni, I'm giving you a chance to attend to the question.
On page 6 of the annual report, I see on your revenue and I say, of course, it has increased from 1.4 something to 2.1. Can I get reasons of the increase? And also page 60 of the annual report. And what equipment was sold to who? That's page 60. On page 64, again, on the defense material disposal, there's an increase from 17.9 to 49.7. I also want to understand what led to that increase and which material was dispensed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. These are not new questions. These are follow-up questions. Just in respect, again, of the program on the MECO 200 frigates. My question was specific, and I would like a specific answer. The claim is that certain requirements were omitted from the original contract. And the question is, what requirements specifically? That's the first follow-up question. The second follow-up question in respect of NIP and DIP, Mr. Kobler tells us that there are two options. What exactly are those options? That's what I would like to know. And then also in respect of the litigation in Lisbon, an agent claiming what I understand is fees for being the middleman in some kind of armaments contract, in respect of what contract and what weapons specifically and when. Thank you.
Can I give the opportunity for the AMSCA to reply? Those are the two last people that I'm trying to give an opportunity. Okay, go ahead.
But maybe I can get Mr. Hobler just to respond to the issues in the annual report.
Thank you, Chair. The reason for the increase in the sale of goods actually the increase in the sale of goods actually part is the export out of our logistics department that also do exports now. And they do freight costs, so that's an increase in the freight cost the service they render to the DoD. That's included in sales. So the service we render, the importation of equipment is part of the fee they render and the fee they charge to the DoD, because that portion do not get the transfer payment. So they fund themselves from a small commission on the actual invoicing of freight costs. So there was a big importation on one of the projects, Kingfisher, that we actually invoiced just before year end. So that was a major increase in that sale. So it's not sale of goods as such. It's a sale of service, of an importation service. On the DMV portion, that is disposal of obsolete equipment, and that's various items that's been disposed. I haven't got a list of the details, but we can supply that to request. But just what was actually sold in that period. But the increase was basically the previous year. There were a lot of waiting periods from approvals not being given. And, I mean, the next year that actually improved. That was why the sales also improved for that period. I can maybe just add on the dip portion. The two options that's currently on the table is our dockyard, the investment into the Armscor dockyard. And the other one is regarding the Nell Dynamics. We're also looking at investing into the Nell Dynamics.
And that's all questions?
Yeah. We should answer those with respect to the dip and the set of goods, it's just the income statement issues. The questions with respect to the litigation and so on, I'm not sure if we have more detail, but if Mr. Tifo has the more details, he can come to the front.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable member, the transaction allegedly happened in the 1978, and it involved the procurement of certain helicopters on behalf of the South African government.
It's really an old deal. Mm-hmm. It's been coming on for years. Okay, that's fine. Let's keep it at that level. Okay. Don't share the without my knowledge. I'm still sharing.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable member, I don't have the specifics of those requirements that are omitted, or rather, promise that can be submitted to the portfolio committee as soon as what I can in the office.
Not be submitted before I lose my job. Please. Honorable members, let's thank the board for being able to come back to us and being able to answer all the questions and give us a good report about the work that they are doing. We do hope that the issue of the CEO will be sorted out so that we don't keep on focusing on a particular matter. But let me thank you also, honorable members, and also let me thank the media and everybody that came to the meeting. And even Mr. Hamilton, thank you for attending our meeting. And PMG also there for taking loans as we get to lie on the south stages. Thank you to everybody. Have a good day.
Okay. Comrade Chair, in conclusion, now that the purchase of this A400 has been stopped by the cabinet, by the government. We need to remind AMSCO that South Africa is an important country on this continent, or in this continent. We need to be strong. Our army needs to be strong. The country needs to be strong. We need to be able to defend ourselves where necessary, using our army. We want to be the strongest country on this continent. They say we are already the strongest. I'm not sure about that. But we need to be the strongest. We should not be ashamed of that, of being a strong country on this continent. So that what I'm saying to AMSCO is that please do consider sooner purchasing something good for our South African army. Something good, something strong. Something perhaps similar to what you were purchasing when this thing was stopped.
You don't know much about that.
That's my last word.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Let me deal with the matter raised by the Honorable Mlambe. I want to place on record of this meeting that the cancellation of the contract was done by AMSCO as the contracting party to that arrangement. And that followed the work that was done by an interdepartmental committee, which then made recommendations, which came to us and also went to the minister and the cabinet. The government is not a contracting party in this matter. It is us who are the contracting party. And we are the ones who told OCA and AMSL that we are cancelling the contract. That's what I want to say. But I'd like to also thank the chair of the committee and the honorable members for the lively engagement in this meeting that we had here today. And we assure you that going forward, we will give the committee as much cooperation as is necessary. We're improving our lines of communication so that we don't have the kinds of mishaps we had in the past.
Thank you, everybody. The meeting is closed. I'm going to go to the next one.